Spectrum Business knows small business owners have to do it all. Get Spectrum One for Business. Just $49.99 a month for internet, advanced Wi-Fi with security shield, and a free mobile line for a year. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Are you struggling to lower your bad LDL cholesterol, even though you may be taking a statin, swapping steaks for salads, and exercising while listening to this podcast? Ask your doctor if Repatha Evolocumab is right for you. With Repatha, you can dramatically reduce bad cholesterol and the risk of another heart attack while enjoying life too, because you're human. And with convenient self-administration, you can take Repatha in the comfort of your own home. Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Repatha can cause serious allergic reactions. Signs include trouble breathing or swallowing, or swelling of the face. Most common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site. Visit Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA. Talk to your doctor today about Repatha.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then, learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Welcome in to the Wednesday night live stream. I'm Bobby Burton, joined by Rod Babers and CJ Vogel of On Texas Football, brought to you by our friend Andy Ludicky at MyPerfectFranchise.net. Guys, you may not know it, but you're in for a special treat, an inaugural edition of something we're going to try tonight. See how it goes. We may incorporate it more and more as the time goes on. But rather than just take questions from the live chat, we're actually also going to take questions on a live call-in line.
Wow.
That's right. You'll be able to call in and ask a question. It looks like it was an old-timey radio show, Rod. You know what those are. Yeah. You call those guys in and, like, get all the questions in. I know that we'll have some fun with it, but hopefully it's something – hopefully it goes better than the Longhorns' night in baseball tonight. CJ, give us the update on the baseball team before we get into some recruiting stuff, as well as talk a little Texas football.
Yeah, Texas had narrowed the gap a little bit. Tough loss a night ago against Texas Tech. I thought Andre Duplantier pitched pretty well. You know, three straight innings, faced the minimum. You know, six career high, six strikeouts, home run off a foul pole. You lose 6-4. Now you have to play tonight. You were in for a bye this evening with a victory last night. Cincinnati hit a three-run home run in the eighth inning. Now they're up 7-3. Longhorns have their work cut out for them. Not a lot of room left for error there. So we'll see.
Need a miracle. Two in barbecue, maybe, in the Big 12 tournament for David Pierce and his team, the Longhorns. Finished the season strong with a sweep of Kansas last weekend, Rod, but then kind of fell on the sword, it looks like. In the Big 12 tournament, Longhorns Lady Softball head coach Mike White takes his team into battle on Friday against the Aggies. The women, Texas women, ranked number one in the country, host Texas A&M. I believe that matchup, by the way, is completely sold out. Completely sold out. Mike White, the head softball coach, will actually join us on tomorrow morning's coffee and football as well. Rod B, I know you had some, you saw some of the news and notes earlier. What do you make of this Turner getting the first two rounds of the college football playoff? Turner, TBS, whatever you want to call it, Turner Sports.
TNT,
They've done a nice job with the NBA. They tried to do a little work in college football about a decade ago, and it was just an abject failure. What do you think about them maybe getting in on the college football playoffs now?
Yeah, I think we know now why they lost out on the bidding for the NBA broadcast deal, because they probably were thinking about, you know, allocating their resources or at least trying to get into the college football realm, which I can't blame them. I mean, college football is the second most popular sport in the country. It is basically right behind the NFL. College football is the second most popular sport. Now, it's not close necessarily to the NFL, but football is, you want to be in, everybody wants to be in the football business if they can be. I'm not hating on basketball at all, but football right now, especially considering the college football playoff, the belief is that the college football playoff is going to be a cash cow and that it's going to be a ratings monster that time of year with all these big brands that are going to be in it, 12-team playoffs. So I think it's a win, honestly, for now, whether the broadcast is going to be good or not, I don't know. But I do think it's a win. I think it's a win for them because I think everybody wants to be in the football business if they can. It's America's most popular TV show, period.
I agree. I also want to mention this. I don't know if y'all saw it or not, but we had an interview. Jerry Hamilton was up in the Metroplex this week. I met with several Texas prospects. He's done some interviews. One of them we just released actually earlier today, Michael Fasusi, the big offensive lineman out of Louisville. What did you think of that one, CJ? He was wearing an A&M shirt, but it sounded pretty good for the Longhorns at times. A little bit of Oklahoma talk as well. What were your takeaways from the big five-star offensive lineman?
Yeah, it's going to come down to Texas A&M and Oklahoma. I don't think Oklahoma has the steam in this one to get over the line, which makes me lead to believe it's going to be a Lone Star State showdown once again for the five-star offensive lineman. He had some really positive things to say about Coach Kyle Flood. Of course, those in-home or, you know, on-campus visits that turn into an in-home, you know, sort of say when the coaches and family members are able to spend time on campus at the high schools, those go a long way. And I think because of the way that recruiting has kind of evolved in that matter, it's an extra home visit for these college coaches and for these prospects to get time with the coaches, with acclimated to the coaching staff, their family members, and et cetera. That's big time. You know, it acts in its own way as another visit on campus for the Longhorns. And Texas was able to do that several times, once in the winter and once in the spring. And I think that's really going to pay off down the long haul. Of course, long way to go. Big time official visits coming up. But I have to like where Texas sits at the moment for the five-star out of the Metroplex. You know, history over the last couple of years tends to lean in Texas's favor with those big time guys out of DFW.
Yeah, it sure does. And that has been the one area where Texas has gotten the best of A&M of late. A&M has done better in Houston, but Texas certainly holding serve in the Metroplex. We'll see how that ends up the rest of this year. All right, before we get to the phone lines and before we get to the chat, let's start here and say thank you to our sponsor. That's Andy Ludicky of MyPerfectFranchise.net. If you're looking to leave the corporate rat race, control your own destiny, perhaps franchise ownership might be for you. If that's the case, you're going to want to give Andy and his team a call at MyPerfectFranchise.net. That's 404-973-9901. Or visit him at Andy@MyPerfectFranchise.net. He's got a system that allows you to figure out which franchise might actually be best for you. All right, Matt, let's put up the phone line and see what we can get going here tonight. This is going to be Rod smiling. He's all giggles about this. We all know how it can be. This could be gold or it could be pyrite, I guess, is the best way. Fool's gold. 512-682-5237. That's 512-682-5237. Again, 512-682-5237. We'll start taking calls here in a few minutes. CJ and Rod, anything else you guys got to y'all want to talk about tonight as you're thinking about this live stream and and what we might be discussing a little bit today.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I don't know exactly what the folks want to discuss. Obviously, the macro of what's going on in college football is something that's kind of captivated me a bit with the ACC and the Big 12 agreeing, approving the antitrust settlements, which is supposed to be up the upwards of what, that $2.8 billion, something like that. But it's not just the settlement. It's that, you know, there's going to be now a new framework for the future of college football. We don't even know exactly how it's going to look, but we know revenue sharing is going to be a big part of that framework. And that, and how athletic programs are going to close that gap. Texas will be fine. It's not Texas we're talking about here. We're talking about mostly the middle tier, mid-major programs, how they close that gap, because, you know, revenue sharing means you got to have what they're projecting is $22 million to $30 million extra money annually. That's a lot of money. And I don't, like I said, we don't know exactly how this is going to end up. Now just talk about, you know, venture capitalists and them private capital being infused in college football, all those kinds of conversations. It's just going to be really interesting. The truth is, these, you know, it's expensive to run an athletic department, but considering that they have had, you know, a long time to get ready for this, and they knew it, the smart ones, that they knew this was coming, I think they should have had a plan already in place to close that financial gap, whatever it's going to be.
Rod, you and me both. They can't get out of their own way. They haven't been able to for decades.
Nope.
It relates to folks at the NCAA. They just have a real problem with that. Before we get to the phone line, again, that phone number, 512-682-5237. That's 512-682-5237. Let's get to this question from Michael Schuler via a super chat. Over and under 3.5 five stars in this class. I'm taking the over. DeCorian Moore, Jamie French, Khalik Lockett, Michael Fasusi. CJ, I see you tucking in your hat there a little bit, getting ready for this question. What do you think of that? Over and under of 3.5 five stars in this class for the Longhorns.
Yeah, that'd be quite the haul, wouldn't it? You know, and two of them coming from the three of them coming from the DFW area, one of them coming from Florida. That's Jamie French, the man out of Mandarin high school up there. Listen, I think Texas sits in a good spot for Jamie French. I think Texas sits in a good spot for DeCorian Moore after he reopened his recruitment from LSU. Of course, we just updated ourselves on Michael Fasusi. It looks like Texas and Texas A&M are going to be those two schools battling it out for the five-star out of Louisville. That's three right there. My big question mark comes with Khalik Lockett, because if you do add DeCorian Moore, who would be the number one guy on the Texas board at the receiving spot, and you add a Jamie French, does that become too many mouths to feed, sort of say, for an elite wide receiver to also want to jump in the fold? I know Sarkisian gets the ball to his playmakers. I know it's a very attractive program and offense for wide receivers to want to come in and be a part of, but at the same time, you have to think about it. You know, when Ohio State gets their – five stars going on the wide receiving side of the ball, very rarely do you see three of them. And I think even then it gets a little bit crowded, and it does so very quickly, of course, because you're coming in a year behind another five-star wide receiver. So my thinking is Texas is in great spots for all four. Does Khalik Lockett, if Texas lands at the DeCorian Moore and a Jamie French, does he still want to be a part of this three cube wide receiver class with two other guys and a five-star ahead of them at the moment? I think to me, it gets a little crowded. And I think as a result, you'll see a stronger push for a Kelshon Johnson. Perhaps, you know, they ramp it up for a Daylon McCutcheon. Who knows? All three very talented guys. I'll say the under right now just to be safe, but hey, adding 3 5-stars to any class is, I mean, that's a great sign with the direction that things are going on the recruiting trail and on the field on itself.
I got to say this. I mean, so Khalik Lockett is a guy that I think has said that he would be okay with that, with being part of a 3-wide receiver elite class. My bigger piece on it is we don't know who's going to end up 5 stars yet. I mean, we don't know if these defensive linemen that Texas is recruiting exactly who's going to end up. Maybe Nick Townsend ends up in that category as a tight end. Maybe someone else. I mean, you don't know. So I would say wait on that for a little bit. I do think Texas will end up with at least three somehow, some way. That's just kind of what Steve Sarkisian does. I mean, that's where I'm at. All right, we're gonna start something new here for the very first time. We're gonna welcome in Paige. Paige is on the hotline, 512-682-5237. That's 512-682-5237. Paige has a question for us. Paige, you're live on Texas Football.
What's up, Paige?
Sounds like they hung up. Oh, for one. That's okay. Standing, they had a question about Cedric Baxter. What that question might be, I'm not quite sure. But y'all have an idea here what you're thinking on Cedric Baxter and how much he's going to be used, in your opinion, the rest of the way or for Texas this year. It's obvious that Jaden Blue is going to get some time. It's not going to be –
I have a question for you guys.
50 or 40, 40, 20.
What do y'all think about C.J. Baxter being the starter? I have heard he's RB number one. Also, guys, who do you think he's going to start right behind?
Okay. Who does RB one? I guess that was Paige breaking through there, Matt. what do you think, C.J. and Rod? C.J. Baxter, RB1, I think he is right now. Who else will be with him? Jaden Blue?
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, we had this conversation, you know, probably about 10 months ago, you know, right as fall camp was rolling around prior to the beginning of 2023 season, is who's going to be your running back number one, right? It was C.J. Baxter who took the first carries a year ago for the Texas Longhorns, a freshman who, really impressed in fall camp, summer conditioning, and before then. So to me, again, if you're coming in with another year of college weight and conditioning under your belt, another spring ball under your belt as well, the game should be a little bit slower for you. You should be able to brush off some of those arm tackles, some light contacts that might not have been able to a year ago. We just saw him in the spring game, Rod. This is one of our favorite plays that we've talked about a few times. Mm-hmm. It looked like he ran through three straight defenders, put another guy on his behind and walked out of bounds unscathed, basically. It was impressive stuff. And I think as he's coming into year two, you'll see that game slow down. You'll see him, again, diagnose holes a little bit earlier and hit the hole harder than what he did a year ago. I like C.J. Baxter to be your number one guy. Of course, staying healthy is going to be the big part. But if he does not, and he had a history last year of getting dinged up a little often, Texas is a tremendous number two option, Jaden Blue. One of the fastest ball carriers in the entire country, is a big weapon out of the backfield as well. That's a great lightning and thunder sort of say, you know, that 1-2 punch there, both of them which have big playability. So you might not be seeing thunder at all, really. I like Baxter 1, Blue 2, and then Trey Wisner to me is a guy that you can use in all sorts of different, you know, molds to be that third guy.
Yeah, I don't think Cedric Baxter will have – as many of those, nicks that he had where he was getting nicked up last year as a player. I don't even know if you want to call them injuries because he was able to battle back from those things. But where he would have to leave the game because he was dealing with some type of injury of some kind. I think he was just hurt most of the time. And the level of physicality at the college level, right? I think he was adjusting to that more than anything as a running back, adjusting to the new kind of pain threshold that he's got to get used to and the punishment at the next level he's got to get used to. And I think this year he'll have more of an armor, have more armor on because of the weight room and one off season. I think they know exactly what he needed. So they'll put the armor on him. I think he'll be able to deal with, like I said, I think it's more the physicality that he was adjusting to as a young player, as a young freshman. And for Jaden Blue, I mean, these guys, their skill sets are so different. This is why they're the perfect tandem. When you had Bijan and Rojo, it kind of reminds me of that because they do complement each other really well. You can use Jaden Blue, I think, more in the passing game. Now that you can't use Cedric Baxter, he'll be a big part of the screen game. Sark loves to run the screen game, so he'll be a big part of that too. But Jaden Blue is going to be a different type of threat in the passing game, vertical threats down the field. We saw that route that he ran in the spring game where he's, basically putting the linebacker in a blender Makes it look like he's going to run that wheel route, cuts it back inside to run that slant, and he's wide open. They're going to be able to put Jaden Blue in one, manipulate one-on-one situations, and Sark can engineer one-on-ones as good as anybody in the country and get him matched up on a linebacker, get him matched up on a safety that can't cover him in the flat. I mean, he's going to do really good at that, and I think that's what Jaden Blue brings to the table. So Jaden Blue's not going to have the rushing yards that Cedric Baxter has, but I think Jaden Blue will have more receptions. And he might end up having more explosive plays overall, just big plays, the chunk yardage plays. And Cedric Baxter will be the guy that moves the chains for you consistently.
All right, good stuff, Rod. We're going to go now to the next call on the line. Again, the hotline number, 512-682-5.
Do it again. Let's go.
And this is Justin. Wants to talk a little program turnaround. Justin, are you there? I think we're having a lag, Matt.
It's definitely a delay.
There's too much of a delay probably. Justin, we'll get back to you whenever we figure out this delay. Yep. We may just have to do the regular calls right now.
That's what it is.
For you guys. Yep, absolutely. All right, let's go to this. And this is something Space City Wrangler said earlier. Doesn't matter who's RB1. Ultimately, it's about touches. My question is, how many does Blue get? I think it should be around 18. You want to protect that speed over 13 games, limit his inside carries.
Is 18 a game? 18 touches? That's a lot.
RB2? That's what I'm thinking.
That's a lot.
Isn't it more like 13 to 15 for him, Rod?
Yeah. I think it'd probably be more closer to, I mean, we can go look at it and see how many touches they had per game, but 18 is a lot. I'm not saying one game he doesn't get that, depending on the matchup and what happens. Maybe he gets hot and starts like, all right, I'm going with the hot hand. Maybe he just matches up better with the run concepts they have versus that opponent. So I'm not saying he won't get that in a game, but I got to think about the most touches that Jaden Blue has had in the game. I'm sure CJ's probably already looking stuff like that up, but I don't know if he's even had that many touches in a game. And I think that's for the lead, potentially for the lead back. And even for the lead back, I mean, that's quite a few touches overall. So
I was going to say, I think the most carries Jaden Blue had in a game last year was 10. I think he did it twice, actually. Yeah. But to the point, I like the idea of keeping both guys fresh. And both of those running backs have mentioned that during the spring, whenever they're talking about the running back rooms and how they kind of complement one another, is, hey, we understand that the shelf life of a running back is not as long as it used to be. We understand for us to be the best that we can be, we're going to need the other two or three running backs in this room to come in and make plays to allow us to have that series off, that possession on the bench to get our wind back, to get our legs back to where they were. And then we can go in and do our thing as well. Jaden Blue mentioned it very well. He was like, yeah, CJ Baxter and I, we've talked about it. We understand it. For me to be my best, he needs to be very good as well. That way we can come in and complement one another. I think right now, regardless of how many touches they'll have, it'll be in a way that suits them. Of course, Sarkisian's done a great job with all of his weapons at Texas. One strength is used, and his favorite thing is getting the ball to running backs in space, allowing them to use their speed, their wiggle, and elusiveness to their advantage. And with Jaden Blue specifically, I can't wait to see how he's utilized because, again, his hands look like a slot receiver at times, and he's able to really, really create some explosive plays as a result.
Yes, Sark says the running back is the most underutilized weapon or position in the passing game. And that's why he's quick to, you know, build a package for his running backs in the passing game, whether it be based on screen game. And I think with Jaden Blue, even with Bijan, I think you get a little bit of a peek. Now, I'm not saying Jaden is Bijan at all, but I think you might get a little bit of a peek if Jaden Blue can, you know, prove that his hands are consistent. And I thought with that, you know, come the wheel concept last year, he did it. But if he can prove that he can be a downfield threat, remember with Bijan, they would run actual routes with him. I mean, they would go empty formation, put him in the slot at number three, and then they would run him down the seam, run him on a skinny post route and throw it to him. Now, can Jaden Blue be that kind of threat? Are we talking about a guy that can be, you know, like what the Alvin Kamara or Christian McCaffrey can be? That's the next level for a guy like Jaden Blue. Now, I'm not saying he is that, but That would be the next level. We see him running those types of routes, actually receiver routes down the field. Right now, I think Sark is content having him matched up on linebackers, running routes from the backfield. But they go spread. They spread it out and go empty. I would be interested to see if he uses him more like he used Bijan, as opposed to how he was, you know, using a guy like Keelan Robinson, who always caught the ball more downfield, but it was always probably within 4 or 5 yards of the line of scrimmage a lot of the times. And they, the only running back that has went really vertical down the field, other than the wheel concept, right, has been Bijan. So I wonder if Jaden Blue can be that kind of threat, like what Jahmyr Gibbs was, you know what I mean? The guy that can go downfield and actually be a threat in the passing game in that respect.
Jahmyr Gibbs, I just have visions of him running that little arrow route for yards, you know, getting past. It's the same as Bijan. Those guys get a little bit loose, and all of a sudden they're 30 yards downfield. Mm-hmm. That's essentially everybody else is trying to run with the deep routes, and they're just making mincemeat of a linebacker underneath. All right, Michael Schuler has another question here for us. If Sark wins 2 national championships in the next 5 years, does it make him more likely to head back to the NFL? Does one make him more likely? It got Nick Saban off to the NFL. Did it not?
That's fair.
Nick got felt like he was called to the NFL after he won one at LSU, then went to Miami, back to Alabama, obviously. Where he will now go down as a GOAT of college football. What do y'all think, Sark? Jerry and I have talked about this, Rod. I think you and I have discussed it a little bit.
Yeah,
Sark's got a little NFL DNA to him.
Yes, he does.
He's not above that by any stretch. What do you think?
I don't think he's a college lifer. I think he could end up, a college coach for the rest of his career. But I don't necessarily think he's a lifer. I don't. I think he has some, you know, Pete Carroll and Nick Saban, those are his two mentors, right? What you just brought up, Nick Saban, what those two guys do. They won national titles, decided, you know what, man, let's go test my skill in the NFL. Because both of them had history in the NFL, with Sark has history in the NFL. So I'm with you. I do think that is a possibility. I am hoping we have to worry about that. I am praying to the football guys that we have to worry about that one day. That would be great. And I do. I think it is a possibility. Yes, if Sark would, because I mean, obviously Harbaugh is in that conversation as well. But I do. I think Sark is looking for the next challenge. And if he ends up, I would say, conquering college football, but yeah, man, you win in 2 titles in 3 years, whatever the span was there. You end up winning that many titles in a short spot time span, next 5 years, 2 of the next 5 years. I could see him looking to the NFL. And now, honestly, the way – I mean, you got a general manager now in college. He is kind of building this roster, the roster construction of it, free agency, transfer portal, NIL, salary cap, general manager. I mean, it's not as – it's the divide and the gap between what the NFL is and college, it's not as wide as it used to be, because now even to the point where it used to be, well, the players are playing for – they have different motivations at the college level. They're playing for, you know, the team and the program and amateurism and their student athletes. Well, yeah, they are, but that's also about to change for the most part, because – they're making as much money as some of the coaches, if not more than the coaches. So, that's like the NFL. The coaches walk in there, the coaches don't have as much power, because they're like, man, that dude's making a lot of money. You know what I mean? And so I think Sark would think about it for a lot of different reasons. Yeah.
Got it. I want to add this, if you don't mind. I would say the one thing I've heard from people that have talked to Sark about this, I have not specifically spoken to him about any kind of inclination or whatever that he might be interested in. So I don't necessarily want to put it on him. But here's the reality. Right now, he is the general manager of Texas football. He's also the head coach. Now, I know Brandon Harris is the GM in title, but from an NFL perspective, Steve Sarkisian is, you know, he's the czar of Texas football. In the NFL, you don't have that necessarily. Only a couple coaches get that kind of thing where they get say-so over personnel as well as coaching. Mm-hmm. And so that ability to have that kind of level of control, I think, Rod and CJ, may be also attractive to Steve Sarkisian. Yeah. You know, where you can, you have say-so over who your quarterback is. In the NFL, good luck. Good luck figuring out who your quarterback is in the NFL. Because that comes down to a draft pick, right?
I agree. I was going to go the same route, Bobby. I mean, when you're the head coach of a college football program, every decision comes down to what your final say is, right? You go after those big-time players. You're in control of who you recruit or sign in the portal. Those big decisions come down to you. It's your program. The NFL, you're playing and coaching and scheming with someone else's players because you're not the one negotiating contracts or deciding who you want to come in and fit your scheme. Of course, that there are times in which the head coach has been that guy. We've seen it with Bill O'Brien in Houston. We saw it with the Bill Belichick during his run with the Patriots. But at the end of the day, I see it as a double-edged sword because, you know, we've talked about it. How crazy is college football now? How many coaches have we seen leave college football from a coordinator's position to go take a position coaching job in the NFL because college football today is so crazy? So if college football continues to go down the path that it's on currently with how there's really only about a three-week span in the middle of July for these guys to kick their feet up and rest, I would understand why you'd have at one point want to return to the NFL. But at that point, to return to the NFL, like the original comment was asking, I think it would have to come after several more playoff appearances, several more winning seasons, 10 wins, 11 wins, draft picks heading to the NFL. And I think a national championship would certainly expedite that timeline as well. But at the end of the day, if you're the head coach of a college football program, you have to love the power. You have to love the control that you have because that is your baby, basically. You get to have the oversight over everything. And in the NFL, you just do not.
At all. All right. Hey, Justin Yarbrough, thank you so much for the super chat. I'll be looking for your question here in a second. I'll get back to that. This from Just a Dude here. Appreciate the super chat. Heard a few times on here that the less touchdowns or fewer touchdowns that Quinn throws, the better. Means the offense is firing. But also heard Quinn will take the next step. Who are we needing to see it run, though? Maybe the backs? I mean, who's going to need to score the TDs if Quinn needs to throw a fewer touchdowns? I don't know that I agree with that for the record. What I've said here, and I am hard on this, Quinn has to improve in the red zone in tight windows. But Sark also has to trust him more in tight windows. I don't think he entirely trusted Quinn a year ago in tight windows. He didn't feel like he necessarily had to very often either. You know, Rod, CJ, do either of y'all agree with Justin Dude here that Sark or that Quinn actually needs to throw fewer touchdowns for the offense to improve? Or what are y'all thinking there? Rod, I see you shaking your head a little bit. What are you thinking?
I don't think so. I think you can have – I mean, we've watched, you know, Quinn be more productive and still have a, you know, really productive running game. Scoring-wise, you're right, Bobby. It all comes down to the red zone. I mean, Texas scored basically on – scored touchdowns on 50% of their red zone trips last year. So if – depending on how you're dividing up those red zone touchdowns, if you increase your red zone touchdown percentage – You know, you'll have more scoring overall. And I think for Quinn, if his deep ball gets more accurate, which we assume that it is, and it has been for the last, I don't know, seven games that he played, you'll have, I think, a couple of more touchdowns just on some of the accurate deep balls with guys that were open if you can hit them in stride on some of those explosive plays too. So I see Quinn with higher touchdown numbers. And I do think, you know, I don't necessarily think Quinn's productivity will take away from the running game. Sark loves running RPOs. So he even talks about it. They're an RPO-based offense. Their most successful plays in the red zone, at least half of them, if you go, I was kind of charting it. We were doing this on Football Theory with Coach Bob Shipley. I look at the top 10 most productive red zone plays for Texas. Half of them are RPOs in the red zone. And because Sark loves the RPO concept. So, You know, basically half the offense, Sark is, you know, using both concepts essentially simultaneously. So Sark loves balance, man. He does. Even when you think Sark should, you know, favor more the pass or the run in the situation, Sark's all about balance in the offense. So I don't ever think he'll allow, even if Quinn's hot and Quinn's having a elite season from a lot of metrics, he's still going to run the rock. That's just that. So the running back's going to get they touches and they looks, and you're going to have balance in the offense.
Yeah, I'm looking back over exactly what Justin Dude asked. I think that, you know, who needs to take do the running backs need to take another step this year, in y'all's opinion, in the red zone? Because I'm also cross-reading another post by Space City Wrangler that talks about how Savion Red was somewhat effective. It got less effective as the season wore on in the Red Cat, so Texas used it less. But do the running backs also need to step up just as much beyond just Jonathan Brooks? And I think probably the answer there is yes. Who do y'all think would take a snap? CJ, you've seen these guys more in high school than maybe me or Rod had. Who would take a snap in a wildcat situation as a running back? Trey Wisner sound like a guy to you? But he's not really an inside runner by trade, but he has that kind of shifty cutting ability. Jarrett Gibson, Christian Clark, maybe. Clark did that actually in Arizona a little bit in high school. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting one. Of course, whenever you talked about Savion Red a year ago, and even Roshan Johnson to an extent, those are some bulky guys that get the dirty yards by falling forward. Does Texas have that big body right now? Well, the biggest body is actually C.J. Baxter, right? He's, you know, about 6'1", 6'2". To me, it's got to be a niche guy, and I'm not sure if Texas has that right now with this running back group. There's a lot of beef, you know, with the younger guys. Both of them are going to carry 220. We've seen Jarek Gibson basically have to walk through door sideways because of the way his broad shoulders make it difficult there, right? Like, he's built pretty well up top. On the flip side, Christian Clark looks tremendous in the thighs, the lower body, right? He looks like he's got those Saquon Barkley-esque thighs, and I think that's great. That's a sign that someone's ahead of where they're supposed to be as college freshmen, but can you trust those guys in that situation? It took a year and a half, 2 years for Savion Red to even see the ball in a meaningful game, right? And it came in which a lot of those times he was in the doghouse, so he had to fight his way out of that, earn the trust of the coaching staff, and even then we only saw those snaps out of the Red Cat probably once a game for 4 or 5 weeks before they put it back on the shelf. So it's all about earning the trust of that team, of that coaching staff right now. I'm not sure you have someone that fits the mold of that necessary Red Cat, Row Cat, whatever formation it was a year ago. I actually wouldn't hate to see Jaden Blue do it, because I do think he brings you extra speed with the ball in his hands right away. That's a misdirection up front. He easily gets lost. You know, he's not the biggest guy. He can get lost behind the big humans that are up there in front of him. Now he's up to 212, 213 pounds. That, to me, at 5'10", is a guy that's not going to be very fun to hit when he's bringing that much speed and force with him. So I guess it's a waiting to see how these guys evolve and mature their bodies this offseason going into, fall camp.
The Wildcat has been so interesting, though, for Texas, because Sark's first year, it was out of necessity mostly, it worked really well. I mean, I'll get my notes, but they won that damn K-State game. Just basically just running Rojo, the Rose Cat, just running Wildcat. Oh, it was the most they had ran Wildcat all year, but everybody was hurt. Quarterbacks were injured, running backs were injured. They just won that game running the Wildcat. And that was probably the most successful they've been running the Wildcat since Sark has been here. And since they really haven't been as effective, no matter in which, even when Rojo went after that in 2022, it wasn't as effective. And last season with Savion Red, it wasn't as effective too. So Sark likes the concept, but he's quick to abandon it if it's not showing immediate success. And maybe that's one of the reasons. I mean, you go look at the red zone. Red zone is so interesting for Texas, man. We really can do a whole damn live stream about Texas red zone last year, because there was no reason for Texas to be as bad as they were in the red zone with all the talent. You know, 3 drafted wide receivers, tight end drafted, running back drafted, O-line stacked, the heaviest O-line in the Big 12, a quarterback that's going to be drafted in the first round too. And I said this to Coach Shipley when we were talking about it too. Texas was a top 5 red zone offense when Sark first got here in 2021. Like, let that sink in. Top 5.
They couldn't get there.
Exactly. When they got there, they were really effective. It was crazy. And then in terms of their percentage, now, even though they're a way more talented team and they're a way better team, you know, we've seen them, their percentage at least, their effectiveness, their rates drop down to some of the worst in the country, like 90th and 120th in touchdown percentage red zone. So I think ultimately the question about the guys in the red zone, the running backs, I think it's multifactorial, and I think it's got to be – it's going to be the O-line. It's got to be Quinn being quicker through the progressions, as you brought up, Bobby. Running backs being more effective at hitting the hole. It's got to be an all-hands-on-deck thing. So I can't wait to see what Sark has basically researched and what he has decided to utilize now, the new concepts he's going to bring to the table in the red zone, because they're going to see something new. There's no way he's going to go running the same place he ran in the red zone the last 2 years when they've gotten worse and worse in the red zone. I mean, think about how prolific this offense could be if they were just average in the red zone last year.
I wanted to add one more thing because I think it's interesting. You know, we talk about the running game in the red zone and how much the offensive line and whoever the pseudo tight ends or jumbo package defensive lineman guys, how important they are there. For me, it's all about what are these routes looking like? You know, we've talked about Texas being a good RPO team on the quick slants. To me, my favorite routes in that red zone that we saw from the 5 to 10 yard line was either the Washington route from Xavier Worthy, where you run about, you get inside release, you cut to the post, and you immediately turn it back to the back corner, that back pylon, or you run the whip route. The whip route for Xavier Worthy a year ago, 2 years ago, we saw it all the time. That big play against Iowa State that put Texas ahead at home, that was a great play. I would have loved to have seen more whip routes, more slants. For Adnan Mitchell, more jump balls. We didn't see that all too often. But at the same time, it's a double-edged sword. So we'll see. It sounds like we've got some
we got a caller here. I mean, we got a guy that's on the line, I think. Who do we have here, Matt, our producer? Let's see if he can hear us.
I can hear you. It's Harry Gamilton.
How you doing, Jerry Hamilton?
I have a question for Rod Babers, the best 21 that's ever played at Texas. Is it true that you dated Kelly Rowland before she became a child of destiny?
I wouldn't say dated. I would say we were friends and acquaintances. There you go. I wouldn't say dated. I wasn't that lucky. I wasn't that smart. I should have been smart enough to do it.
Hey, Jerry, I got to ask you while we got you, dude. Michael Fasusi interview. I know you got another one coming up tomorrow. You've been up in the Metroplex visiting with recruits. What's the word on the street up there about how well or not well Texas is being received by some of these recruits?
Yeah, I think it's very well. I think they're just knocking everything out of the park, from the official visit process to the relationships. I think they had a great plan for Michael Fasusi's visit. So he visited by himself with his father for spring practice, not with a big visit weekend. And I thought that was really well received by Fasusi and his father. He kind of got to spend a day as a Texas player, what that would look like, and got a lot of one-on-one time with the staff. So I think Texas has a great approach. I've made multiple school stops. We're not going to publicize them all. But from the high school coaches to the prospects, Texas is hot in DFW, guys. They're hot. That doesn't mean they're going to win every recruitment, but they're hot in DFW. We'll have more on that tomorrow.
I do have one more question for you. The Fasusi interview that you posted, a lot of good comments coming from folks on that. What did you think of that young man out of Louisville?
So I thought what was great about Fasusi, watching his training with Donald Hawkins, is that, you know, look, some five-star guys are harder to reach, right? They're national recruits. They've had their butt kissed a little bit, so to speak. But Hawk got on him a couple of times in a good way, coaching him up, and Fasusi took it to the next drill. So as long as Fasusi wants to learn and be a sponge, I think that's going to be great for him. And I think that's the key for all these guys, is you understand how to maximize your talent. And I think he does. And by the way, I think the schools in order right now, Texas 1, A&M 2, Oklahoma 3, Missouri 4, I think he stays in state.
Interesting. All right. Hey, Jerry, thanks for calling in. I know you're headed back to Houston. You're going to speak at a Longhorn Club meeting tomorrow. Be safe, buddy. We'll see you tomorrow morning for coffee and football.
Thanks, Jerry.
I'm so excited to be here. I was a caller on the first show. Thank you.
Love Jerry Hamilton, my man.
I thought Jerry was going to come in and go, first time, long time, guys. First time.
Yeah. Hey, a couple of quick comments real quick from folks that have asked this. Update on OL Nick Brooks from Sark After Dark. It's my understanding that Texas was actually in Iowa meeting with Nick Brooks today. So Kyle Flood doing work a little bit right now. Earlier, Justin Yarbrough had put in a super chat. Did not attach the question. Here it is. With the team's success over the past few years, after so many ups and downs, it feels better to watch the program continue to climb versus a one-year leap. Man, we talked about this last year. Look, as much as we want Texas to be good, we didn't want a one-hit wonder. I mean, we didn't want no, what is it, soft sell and tainted love. We wanted the real thing, right? I mean, that's what Texas fans want, right? They want consistent, repeatable success. And I will say this, the Texas fans, generally speaking, now not all the young ones, CJ, your age and younger, because they don't remember it all necessarily, but Rod knows what it looks like.
Yeah.
I know what it looks like. And you know what, if it passes the smell test, right? And right now it passes the smell test because you got quarterbacks, you got playmakers, you got draft picks on defense, you got draft picks against both sides, and your head coach has gone ahead and proven he can get you there and get you to the playoffs. So all of those things help you alongside the fact that you're Texas and you're recruiting, have a tremendous recruiting base. You're the flagship university in the state, et cetera, and so on. Rod, you agree with me that you feel like this doesn't feel like a one-hit wonder. I never thought I'd say tainted love on this program.
No, it's a good reference. I get the reference. I love it. It's a good reference. Solid reference about the one-hit wonder there. But I feel like there's longevity to it. I think there's sustainability to this. And Sark has even talked about that's why, you know, the first year was so bad. It was 5-7. He even talked about probably could have won another game or two if we had, you know, cheated, cut some corners that season and didn't build the foundation the right way, but they wanted to build the foundation the right way so that they could have some sustainability so that this window would have some longevity. And yeah, so I think there's no doubt. And the players who are coming to Texas now, to hear them speak about coming to Texas to be developed is just boom. And we haven't, it's been a long time since you had guys like Isaiah Bond and other, some of the young guys coming to Texas, who some of the young offensive linemen we've heard say come to Texas to be developed, and development be now something that is no longer an issue. Like that, honestly, you could argue that was the biggest issue for Texas the last decade plus. And they've proven that with what they've done with the class they inherited, the guys that they inherited, and now they'll prove it with the guys that they've been recruiting, that they've stacked this roster with. So the development's great. The culture is really good. We've been observing that in a lot of different ways, a lot of different players. And I think the coaches and the scheme is good. I think about, was the last time Longhorns fans had an offense that they actually liked, that was appealing to them. You know, even though Greg Davis and Mac won a lot of games, Longhorn fans complained about the offense with Greg Davis most of the damn time, even though they were winning double-digit games. And they didn't like the offense. Before that, you know, Makovic coming in, you know, people complained about Makovic and Makovic's offense. Probably got to go back to Daryl K. Roy when last time Longhorn fans had an offense they really liked that was appealing to them. Longhorn fans don't complain about Sark's offense. They may complain about Sark, you know, and game management and some play calls here or there,
red zone,
feel for the game, that kind of stuff. But the offense itself, hell, that's why he's recruiting all these wide receivers. That's why he's able to get Arch Manning and them quarterbacks. They're like, oh no, this offense is legit. And I think that's also a part of, you know, what makes Sark's the the scheme and the continuity with the staff and everything, I think that's also part of it. And right now it's one of the most appealing and I think one of the most effective in the country too. So everything that you really could point at, and don't, let's not act like NIL is not helping Texas right now. All the changing, all the changing framework and the changing landscape of college sports, and it's happening very quickly. It's all helping Texas. It's all helping Texas. It's none of it's hurting Texas. The NIL, transfer portal, none of that's hurting Texas. It's all benefiting Texas in the break.
Hey, Rod, I got to give this to Burn Orange Horn because I actually think he had maybe one of the things that tells you why we think it's sustainable. Texas now has a real OL and DL. That makes it sustainable. And yeah. Or they're going to get them in the portal.
Yep.
That's – there's no two-year gaps of having to start true freshmen. I mean, look, I mean, you know how many times over the last 10 to 12 years Texas has started a true freshman on the offensive line? Probably seven times too many. That's the answer. I mean, when Josh Cochran has to start as a true freshman at tackle, you're not doing so great in recruiting. Or something's going wrong in recruiting.
You're right.
And I'm not – that's against Josh, great Longhorn, et cetera. Now an assistant coach, by the way, in college football. But my point being, how many times did we see that over the last decade and a half? About seven times too many is probably the real answer there. All right, Juan here with Super Chat. The previous Texas staff in recruiting was Houston-centric. This staff is Dallas-centric. Is that true? I think there's a level of validity to that, but I also want to say that there's been a pendulum switch to more players in Dallas of late too, more highly rated players. And I do think that they're not – like last year, Jordan Washington and Trey Owens from Houston. It's not like Texas is – you know, Texas got shut out 2 years ago or 3 years ago by A&M because the Aggies went – no offense, but they bought a lot of players in Houston. They just did. When Texas at that point in time was not in the NIL game and competing at that level. And so there's a little bit of that there. I don't know that it's Dallas over Houston as it is players one place over the other. I would add this. They're out in California like bandits right now. CJ and I have talked about this along with Jerry. Nine guys right now from the state of California has scheduled official visits. Texas only scheduled at this point, we believe, 44 official visitors. So that's a quarter of the group right there, a fifth. That's a pretty significant amount. That's more than the city of Houston has scheduled official visits.
And they're great players too. I mean, you look at it.
Yeah, exactly. It's not Little Sisters of the Poor. I mean, they're players that got scholarship offers everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Hayden Lowe, I mean, Marcus Harris, we've talked about him. Dijon Lee still expected to come in for a midweek. He's the only midweek official visitor I have on my list at the moment for the Longhorns. And then, of course, two guys that are really intriguing to me at the linebacker position. The first is Matai Tungai, the USC commit, and Matt Faramoy. Again, if you ever watch his tape, Bobby, I mean, I'm sure you have. For any folks who haven't, that is a lengthy kid that can bring the boom, and I think that's exactly what the Longhorns are looking for out of their linebacking group at the moment. They've done a great job already getting Elijah Barnes in the fold. Riley Pettijohn looks really good for the Longhorns at the moment. I saw him 2 weeks ago for his spring game. If they're able to add a third, whether it be him or Jonathan Cunningham, that's you have to be very pleased with the way that linebacking group shook up in the 25 class.
Yep, good stuff. Somebody says Lynn Amity says hi. That's a name from the past. Jonathan Mackey, with the size of the SEC as big as it is, 16 teams now, right? Would it be better for there to be a small tournament for the championship? You want a tournament and then another tournament?
Man.
That would be tough, Jonathan.
That'd be tough.
That would be tough, especially if this thing gets to – well, it's already at 12. Man, I don't know that they're going to want to play more. I get where he's going.
Yeah.
But you'd have to have a 10-game regular season and then have the top four play it off the final 2 weeks of the regular season. It would I think is maybe too much to ask. Anybody disagree with me on that, Rod or CJ, y'all in line?
No, I don't. I don't disagree with you, but I think ultimately they still may expand the playoff even more. That's still at least a conversation that they're willing to have. I don't know if they are gonna, they should, but you know the ratings are gonna be blockbuster. You know the ratings gonna be through the roof. They're gonna make a ton of money off advertising, and they're gonna want more. They're gonna expand that pie, and they can just add a couple of more teams. Add, you know, go to 14 or go to 16, whatever. So I think they still could end up expanding. So for that reason. Yeah, I don't know if I can you know justify a conference tournament because then you get to the point where you'd be like the NFL playing 17. They want to get to 18 games and they're gonna get it. You're gonna be close to that if you get to the conference tournament.
Hey, here's one. Michael Spruill, ask UGA what they think about playing an SEC championship game. that was a tournament of sorts, right? One game and out there for them. Hey, CJ, this one from AJJ Sports. Have you broken down film on Dia Bell, the quarterback out of South Florida, or Troy Hune, the quarterback out of Southern California, those two juniors in high school coming in for the elite camp, I believe June 1. And who do you think is Texas is higher on at this point in time? I'm not even, you know, take the question of whether or not you've broken down the film and watched those guys. And then what you think right now about where they sit on the board.
Well, I think we'll get a definite answer to that June 1st, right? I mean, both guys coming in, that'll be a big weekend for both of them. When I watch Troy Hune, I see a natural passer. And I think it's someone who just understands how to get the ball to their wide receiver. He's still very new to the position. Said he only started playing very late in high school. But that arm looks very raw to me. It looks like he's going to have the opportunity to grow that arm into a bigger weapon. But the fundamentals look right. He's working with a great quarterback trainer, Danny Hernandez, out in the West Coast, helped train Malik Murphy, has a number of other big name guys. Bryce Young was one of his back in the day as well. But when you watch him, it's just a natural throwing progression. I like what I see versus Dia Bell, where maybe not the most, you know, technically sound thrower of the football, but he has the mindset, right? He's a point guard in the basketball court. Obviously, his dad was a great NBA defensive player multiple years in a row, Rajah Bell. He understands how to facilitate. And when you're a quarterback, that's almost just as important as being fundamentally sound. The question is there enough consistency with either one of them? We were talking about a very young, raw quarterback in Troy Hune and a guy who might not be as technically savvy as, you know, some of these other big-time guys, both really talented, both coming in. If Texas picks one or the other, I don't think they'll have much to complain about or worry about what the future of the position will look like. It's a great problem to have both coming in and finding a quarterback between the two of them. We'll see how Texas favors them whenever they're throwing. What's interesting to me is A.J. Milwee was able to see both of them this spring. And whenever he's out watching quarterbacks, he's standing right there like it's a 1990s, early 2000s slam dunk competition. He's got the camcorder in hand right in front of these guys the entire duration of the practice. So he's taking that film, he's evaluating it, and he's bringing it right back on to Steve Sarkisian so they can sit back and have a roundtable discussion about who their quarterback is going to be. And, of course, we'll get that final answer June 1st. And into the later months or later weeks of June, I think you'll see one of those two guys officially become that number one guy for the Longhorns.
All right, Texas falls 8-7 in the final against the Cincinnati Bearcats. 2 in barbecue for David Pierce and the Longhorns in the Big 12 tournament. Of course, they will be in the NCAA tournament. We'll be waiting to see where they're seated, etc. This does not bode well necessarily for some later round hosting, etc. Per se, maybe, but we'll see what all that means. Before we go any further, we got several more questions here lined up that I want to get to. I want to say thank you to our sponsor. That's Andy Ludicky of MyPerfectFranchise.net. If you are possibly interested in owning your own business, Andy might be the guy you want to talk to. Give him a call, 404-973-9901. He has a system where he interviews you and your spouse or the person that you want to go into business with. And he talks to you about all the possibilities based on the amount of money you want to invest, the amount of time you have. Perhaps it's even a second business or a second income stream you're interested in through the franchise way. Andy will be there for you. Give him a call, 404-973-9901, or reach out to him via email, Andy at myperfectfranchise.net. Thanks, Andy, for your sponsorship of On Texas Football. We really do appreciate you guys. All right, got another couple questions here coming. Tom Stamey, Sark said last year he had a good team and expected to win, win, win. Has he said that this year? I actually heard him say it on Friday. So, and I don't mean that like he's not, I wouldn't say it's like this big, oh, he's got to do it. You know, this is going to happen. All this other stuff. It's very similar to the, you know, he thinks he's built a culture that is a winning culture. You know, good for him. Right, guys? I mean, that's, I don't know that he's come out and said he expects to win, win, win. He said it back in the spring. He felt like he had guys to do it. Right, CJ?
Yeah, no, Sarkisian's very funny with the way that he approaches some questions and media availabilities. You know, he kind of has a smirk on his face when he gets a question that he doesn't want to be too blunt about or kind of, you know, sit back and throw some tea leaves out there. But there's times where he's asked about certain position groups or what he makes up of the team in its entirety or, you know, what we talk about, the leadership and the makeup of the mental side of things for this Texas program. And he kind of sits back and, you know, you kind of see that grin peeking out a little bit. You know, he I think he really likes this team. He's not going to come out and say he's got a great squad. He wants his guys to work hard. What's the point in telling your team that, hey, you're going to do very well this year? If, you know, that's going to be what goes to your head. We just watched Kirby Smart 2 years ago convince his back-to-back national championship winning teams that no one believed in them, right? Like, that's got to be what you instill to your team. But at the same time, if you see and you watch Sarkisian enough, you'll pick up on when I'll put it this way. I don't think Sark's going to be a great poker player. You know, he kind of has a tell whenever he sees something in his team. And I do think he has a really good football team. And I think he knows it as well. But of course, getting that extra step out of his group is going to be what helps him become the better coach in his own right. So we'll see. But I really do think he has a good team in front of him.
Returning starting quarterback, man, with a really good O-line, with a veteran O-line. Veteran O-line and a starting quarterback, a multiple-year starting quarterback would make any coach feel good.
Yeah, I agree with you, Rob. Now, this one from Robert Pope. In a 12-team playoff, do you see the conference championship games becoming secondary to resting players for a playoff run? Mm. Boy.
I do not.
I think there could be a player or two. As long as you think you're in and not going to get a bye, why wouldn't you rest somebody? A better seed, the potential of a better, slightly better seed. If you think you're 5-8, you're not getting a bye.
Yeah, but you get a home game.
Yeah, that's fair.
And you also get an incentive if you're the head coach, right? That's a couple $100,000 coming in your pocket. I don't think anybody's going to be willingly wanting to sit, you know, an Xavier Worthy, Trey Moore, whatever it is. Still, I mean, college football, and we've talked about it. There's so much pride. There's so much, you know, bragging rights that go into the sport. It's what makes it so beautiful, right? Everybody on your street growing up probably was a fan of 4, 5, 6 different schools growing up. You never had that one community that always supported one school throughout. You know, you see folks in Austin, you know, supporting LSU, Houston, A&M, you know, everybody wants to beat everybody. If you're going to beat in the conference championship in which you're able to go on a run like in Oklahoma did in the Big 12, where you can say we are the undisputed best team in this conference and there's nothing that you can do to stop us, why wouldn't you have that opportunity? Why wouldn't you take advantage of that? It's going to help you in recruiting. By then, if you're back into that conversation a year ago, you just won a conference championship. You were just in the college football playoff. Probably added a few guys out of the portal that are going to help you maintain that level. You probably just added a couple guys out of the recruiting ranks that saw you win that hard route, that saw you, you know, lift that banner, help you recruit as well. So it helps. I think there's a laundry list of reasons to not, you know, quote unquote, save your players for those games, even if it doesn't mean as much, right? You're still going to have to go play 2, maybe 3 games in the college football playoff after that. But I think it's a trickle down effect that you have if you do win that conference game that will help you out for further years and also help get your guys acclimated to what the big stage of a college football playoff will be like, because they just did it, right? They just went out and won a game. They're going to have good confidence going into that playoff. So play the game, win the trophy, and then move on from that.
Got it. I want to finish with this one tonight. Actually, there's two that are really good, so we're going to go a little bit over for folks. Ski Breck, who is the starting O-line game one? Odds-on favorites right now, guys, would be Kelvin Banks at left tackle, Hayden Connor at left guard, Jake Majors at center, DJ Campbell at right guard, and Cam Williams at right tackle. You could talk about iterations of Cole Hudson or Nato Umeoluju all you want. I do think those two will play a lot more. They'll play those two backups a lot more than they did at all last year. But the odds-on favorites right now are exactly who I said. And I'm not trying to dismiss anything. That's just the odds-on favorite. Hey, Football Junkie with one that I thought was interesting. Will Trey Moore even start at Texas? Obviously, he's not playing the Jack position, which is where Baron Sorrell is first team. He's playing at Buck, which is where Ethan Burke has been seeing a lot of time. I think Trey Moore is going to start. Will he start every game, or are they going to rotate starting? I think that's a fair question. Rod, you seem to have a little thought there. I can see you percolating there a little bit. What do you think?
No, it is interesting because I just wonder, and I got to go watch a little bit more film on him, about him versus the run, Ethan Burke or him, like which one of those guys is better versus the run. These guys are definitely going to rotate. They want to rotate guys on defense. We know that. And the edge, they believe that they're really deep and they is going to be one of the strengths of the team. And Sark has bragged. Speaking of Sark bragging, he's bragged about the edges multiple times. And yeah. Trey Moore specifically, he has bragged about, even though we didn't see much of him in the spring game. I know when you get any team either in a hole, talking about at a deficit, and they got to battle back from, you know, multiple scores, or you're in a predictable passing situation, you're definitely going to want Trey Moore out there because I think he's your best natural pass rusher right now. And I think he actually may be behind Anthony Hill and young Colin Simmons in terms of natural pass rushing ability coming off the edge. So he's impressive. That's a good point, man. I don't know if he's going to start. I mean, Ethan Burke, I'm not going to disrespect Ethan Burke like that and just say he's going to slap Ethan Burke and take his job. I think those guys are definitely going to split reps there. It depends on which one of them is more stout versus the run. Is Trey Moore a guy you can trust on early downs in the run game? That's going to be a big question. I know you can trust Ethan Burke on those downs. He's already proven that for Texas. Trey Moore is a better pass rusher. I think that's not in question either.
That might be how it shakes out. You have your first and second down guy, and then you come in with that speed Ferrari, you know, get after the quarterback package with Moore and Colin Simmons, and you throw Anthony Hill up in the line. You throw some looks up there, move Alfred Collins, into the middle, and you all of a sudden have a really, really impressive speed threat that can get after the quarterback with that package. We'll see, of course, but to me, being 6'2 as an edge rusher off the in the SEC poses a bit of a challenge versus what is a 6'6 guy that still moves very well with that lacrosse background. So good problem to have, no doubt. When you have a guy that had 20 and a half sacks last 2 years being asked whether or not he's going to be a starter, right? You know, this is the issues that you want to have at Texas.
Hey, I got to say this, CJ, just so you know, Rod has the perfect name for that speed defensive pass rush package that you're talking about. Rod calls it the NASCAR package.
Well, it's not me. That's
everybody does.
Yeah, the NFL, that's kind of what they call NASCAR packages. But Texas should definitely have one this year, man. They got so many edge rushers. Put all of them on the field. Whichever ones you believe are stout enough, physically have the stature, the frame to bump inside, bump them inside. Ethan Burke might be able to do it. I mean, he's versatile. As long as they got the bulk for it, bump them inside. They'll just be going up against unathletic guards. Man, that'll do those dudes dirty. And then you put your speed on the outside. That's when you put Colin Simmons or Trey Moore or, you know, Anthony Hill. You may want to put him on the edge, and you can really give quarterbacks some issues, man, on passing down, no doubt.
All right. That's going to do it for tonight. We appreciate you guys joining us. We tried to do the call-in stuff. Didn't quite work out as planned, but Matt told the folks in the chat that we're going to try that again. He thinks he may have figured something out. We'll have it ready for next week.
Right.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to our sponsor, Andy Ludicky of MyPerfectFranchise.net. Thank you to Rod Baber, CJ Vogel, to Robert Pope, Jonathan Mackey, Juan, who else? Justin Yarbrough, Justin Dude, Michael Schuler, a couple times with Super Chats. We appreciate you guys all. Again, we'll see you tomorrow. Also, check us out on OnTexasFootball.com. For CJ and Rod, I'm Bobby Burton. Matt Hutchison, our producer. Hook 'em.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off Super Paint products and Super Deck stains from June 14th through the 24th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your bedroom, living room, or home office, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity, set up chores, and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.